I think the Congress chair from Sri Makulani will be here shortly. Several members are caught up, for example, in the finance committee taking on Yeni within the ASU provincial conference and the deployment. Dikileli has explained that she may not be able to say that right this afternoon. She's going to be here. So we're not sure about Dikileli, and on our side, there is. Mr. Mania has apologized, Mr. Lee has apologized. Can I put it to you that this doesn't mean a thing? In other words, we have got our researchers here, and we will process issues exactly as this matter, exactly as we do every other issue. I have a letter here from the DG, and I really don't think you have to do this. Really, it's a ridiculous letter. You should not be intimidated. We've got a letter here from the DG explaining that he is in an interministerial task team meeting in the Northwest. But he has requested Mr. Momania to lead a delegation and give all the other men to the young man. So, why are you doing this? We think it's that unless you fired Momo from the capital division, and he could be fired, so he's getting old, he needs to move on, but he's not fired. So, in that case, I don't think Momo will start to get you. I want to write to you.
Can I ask you to
locate where we are? The chair had explained to me for a variety of reasons, some of his members are not here. Full chair. Yeah, we started at 2, for 3 minutes past 2. So we have public hearings. We agreed that we did not get enough representativity from those opposing, or those supporting the carbon tax vote, mainly, I suppose, environmental NGOs, and we need a more balanced than we often are. So Alan, who is sick today, says that some organizations did reach out to him. Can you give us your names and details to Alan Bishop again? You can find both the email addresses and say that you want to make further, we want to make submissions, and we will find a slot for those of you who haven't spoken already. So those of you who have spoken already, you will give written submissions. Those of you who haven't spoken, you will get a chance to speak, right? In August, when we come back. Today is the last sitting day for our committee. We'll be back, I think, on the 14th of August, and we'll confer with Comrade Makulani and decide on the date that we both agree on. So, today what we're doing is National Trade is going to reply to the policy issues that emerged in the debate around the hearing. And then we will allow those of you who made submissions to comment on that, and National Trade will put it together, and then we'll itemize the issues. And then between Comrade Phil and I, we will meet again sometime in August. Between August and September, the priority in our committee is what we call the VAT bill, because of the budget process. So our priority is the VAT bill and the PIC bill. So to be realistic, Comrade colleagues, the carbon tax bill will only come on the agenda around the middle of September, I think so. But we'll check on your availability. Is anything you want to say to the team? All right, then we over to Treasury and your team. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Can we hand over to you?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. We have a delegation today from Treasury, Chambini, SARS, or those teams, and we have colleagues from Environmental Affairs as well. I don't know why they keep behind me, I guess. So, Chair, what we're doing today, and do you want to just smile? So, we've just got a list, I know we're not covering everyone from here, but I think we're covering everyone from Treasury and SARS. We've also invited Cecil Morden, who was in the Treasury, just described that given the work he's done on environmental taxes. Chair, I think just to remind ourselves, because the actual initial hearing was held in February, which was before the budget, but the initial draft carbon tax bill was published for comment in November 2015, after Cabinet had approved in October before. After we got comments, we went back to Cabinet and we got a draft, we got another version of the tax bill, which is the version that we submitted, which we released on our website, and which we are discussing here. And I think it's important to note it was submitted before the 2018 budget. So we've had those hearings, Chair, in February earlier this year, so that was also just before the budget. And that's why, and that's material, because since the budget, the minister at the time announced that it would take effect then on the 1st of January 2019. So the policies reflected there, Chair. We've got a number of past papers which we've published in 2013, the carbon tax policy paper, there's the bills, and there's various other papers. So this was before. Now, Chair, I just want to clarify one issue. Unlike other taxes, like say we could increase VAT, we could do so because there is an existing bill, even if it requires subsequent approval by Parliament through changes in legislation. But currently on the carbon tax, there's no bill. So no bill means effectively that implementation date really is just a theoretical point. It can't really be implemented. But having the bill does allow, gives the minister then some leeway to announce the actual date. I suspect we're going to have to slightly revise the implementation date because this will depend on when Parliament passes the bill, and it will need a period then to put in place regulations. So I anticipate a delay by a few months, but obviously that will be left for the Minister to announce. So, Chair, I'm going to hand over to just maybe let Charlene Hamraj come in. If you want to just take over. But let's be quick with the introductory slide. But, Chair, I want to make the point. Okay, let me just do this. So this just gives you all the details of when we first started with the paper on environmental fiscal policy reform in 2006. And the carbon tax discussion paper was in 2010. So it's been 8 years in the making. In that time, emissions are still going on, and the clock is ticking against the world. And as I've said before, I do think that climate change represents the biggest risk to humankind. And really, those are the issues that we'd like to focus on. And Chair, just to point out, that because we've taken the bill several rounds, we've already made significant amendments to the bill or to the original approach. And many of these issues remain even with the latest submission. When it comes to a tax, people are always going to have views on what the tax rate is going to be. And unless the rate is either zero or very high, depending on where you stand, that and only that may satisfy some constituents. So it is a judgment call that government has to make on the appropriate rate. I think linked to that, and that's the second point, so we started off with 120 rands per ton of carbon. And this is an unusual bill. We actually specify the annual increases by or the maximum for the next, what is in the phase one, the next 4 years or so. But importantly, Chair, we realize that there does need to be a signal for the long term, that this text is here to stay. And yes, if we are losing the race against bringing down emissions, we will ratchet it up. This is not like other taxes where perhaps we tend to lower the taxes, the economy is growing. In this instance, if emissions are growing, we will increase the tax, just like with the sugary beverage tax. If we aren't succeeding in the fight, we do need to look at the rate so that it's much more effective. The second issue that's been raised, which is point one, is the electricity pricing and electricity levy. As you know, we do have a levy of 3.5 cents per kilowatt hour, and we accept, and the points have been made, that you know you can't have both, and we accept that to some extent that needs to be taken into account. Initially, we're talking about the credit for electricity generation levy, and business also enjoys. You know, maybe we were silly, but before the tax starts, we already provided tax incentives on energy efficiency, and in a sense, that's just to signal that with this tax, the issue is to actually be clear to all that this tax will come, and it will get higher and higher if we don't succeed in a race, and to the extent that. We need to take into account electricity and how it's generated and so on, and sort of processes that there are in business, that the incentive is meant to get businesses to shift towards cleaner technology, and that's the reason for the incentive. And the fact that it's upfront, or done from, was it 2013 or 2015, we started early. So that's the issue. Here, the third issue that's come up is the alignment of carbon tax policy with carbon budgeting system that GIA is responsible for. Let me say that in designing the carbon tax, we've worked very closely with GIA, and this tax, we've been clear, has not been brought about to raise revenue, especially in the initial phase. It's been put in place because South Africa has commitments. The latest commitment is our nationally determined contribution through the Paris process. People like Charlene and Memory here can provide much more detail. They're the experts and our colleagues sitting behind me from here. But we also need a system to actually monitor the actual emissions across industries or sectors, and we've introduced a 5% carbon budget allowance that's been done in a voluntary basis for the first phase. The first phase will last 3 or 4 years. We only are tentative about it because depending on where we start, the end line for phase one won't change or can change very little because we've got to get phase two to start. And once we start with phase two, then you know we will ensure at that point that to the extent that there's a view that that there needs to be better alignment, that will be done after we assess. We make an assessment of both instruments after 2 or 3 years of implementation and before we start with phase two. So there's an integrated review process to assess both instruments after 3 years of implementation. We've also been asked about, obviously, the impact on growth. So we've had a carbon tax modeling study to look at the socio-economic impact of the carbon tax, impact on growth. And we found that it's actually got a very mild impact on growth. But I should say, this doesn't take into account the fact that as you move in the world, we're going to... And we can actually take steps sooner rather than later. It means that we can make the adjustment sooner and be in a position to actually lead. So there's huge benefits this way. Similarly in jobs, there's huge benefits if you move towards green technology. Chair, then maybe you should just go through the rest in the detail. But I'm just pointing out these were the issues over both rounds that were raised. Some were taken into account earlier, and some we still continue to make adjustments. We have had engagements with many of the people who submitted, and so there's a continuing process of engagement.
Thanks,
Pauline.
Good afternoon, colleagues, honorable members. So one of the gets to picture some of the sort of the top four comments that came through the various processes and the changes that we made. The other major ones included that one of the issues around the carbon tax was, if we introduced it, how do we address potential competitiveness impact on industry? So we proposed and introduced a trade exposure allowance up to a maximum of 10%. Based on consultations on the 2015 bill, there were proposals for us to shift from a company-based to a sector-based allowance, and we adopted this. This was done in consultation with industry. We also then had engagements around the methodology on how they will qualify for the allowance, and we introduced thresholds, and there was a further refinement in terms of the threshold that was proposed based on the trade intensity of the actual activity. So that's on the trade exposure allowance. The other issue that came up through the commenting process and which we signaled right at the beginning in terms of the carbon tax policy paper that was put out in 2013 was around the carbon tax pass-through for the liquid fuel sector. That in principle that this is something that we could consider. We have received a proposal from industry which we are looking at, and we will get back to the committee on the mechanism for this pass-through. Initially in terms of the proposal that we put forward, we had allowances, which was the basic tax-free allowance, based on comments from industry around those sectors and activities where it is difficult to actually mitigate emissions. So for example, cement and steel, we then provided an additional 10% tax-free allowance for process emissions. This was also applied for fugitive emissions, mainly from the mining sector, where again it's difficult to mitigate, so we proposed an additional 10% allowance. We then also, as part of the consultations on the design of the tax, received comments on the possible role to use offsets, so investments in renewable energy type projects, and to offset that against the carbon tax liability of an entity. We introduced the carbon offset allowance, which will basically be up to a maximum of 10%. That will be proposed. And based on consultations on the 2015 bill, we were requested to extend the scope of the offset to include renewable energy projects, which is what we've done over the last year. In addition to that, there were some sectors or activities where, in terms of, so for example, forestry and plantation that is used in the manufacture of paper and pulp, so those emissions that are sequestered in that period that the trees are in existence, there was a request for a deduction. We considered this, and then we introduced a specific deduction in terms of the carbon tax payable for these sequestered emissions. In addition, when we received comments from stakeholders, there was a request to also look at carbon capture and storage, so storage in geological reservoirs, and we expanded the scope of sequestration to include this. And then lastly, the carbon tax design and the tax base is based on emissions that will be reported to the Department of Environmental Affairs. For purposes of that reporting, there exist thresholds. Initially, there were no thresholds applied for the application of the tax, but through the thresholds that are imposed for reporting purposes, more from an admin perspective, they will also apply for the carbon tax. So that's largely the big policy changes that was made over the period 2013 to 2017. Okay, so very quickly, on the main comments that we received during the 2017 looking at the 2017 bill, which also some of them build on the previous comments that we received, the big ones is that firstly, the carbon tax rate is too low. This is mainly arguments that come through around if you look at the international studies that have been done and the social costs that are being proposed, the rate is far lower than those. There were additional comments around the carbon tax modeling, the socioeconomic impact, the need for longer term certainty, especially for the second phase of the tax, which we will talk through. And the timing of the introduction of the tax, which is what Momo spoke about the possibility of a slight delay in the tax taking into account some of the regulations that need to be put in place. The fourth big issue was around the policy alignment with the carbon budget. It's a twofold process, which is the first one that we provided a 5% carbon budget allowance. The second, we'll talk a little bit more about that. And then three other issues where there are specific proposals for changes is around the energy efficiency savings tax incentives, which comes to an end in 2020. So we will have to review that and align with the carbon tax policy first phase. The second is around the taxation of domestic aviation. And the third is around the admin issue. Including the use of the Customs and Excise Act and the payment schedule for the carbon tax. So just very quickly, the one issue that we want to talk to broadly is comments around our NDC commitment that was made in terms of the Paris Agreement, where we committed to our emissions peaking, plateauing, and declining. And the role of the carbon tax in this context. There were some stakeholders broadly that were very supportive of the carbon tax and noted it as a critical tool to help us achieve our international obligations. And they noted the legislation as being a landmark part, a piece of legislation in terms of guiding what we will be doing over the medium to longer term. On the other hand, there were some stakeholders who were of the view that our emissions were below the benchmark trajectory and unlikely to increase above this level, so there were questions around why do we need a carbon tax to actually achieve our emissions. I just, our former colleague is here, so he'll speak to some of these slides.
Thank you, Sharon, and thank you, Chair, for this opportunity. I think try to just contextualize the emission trends. We've got a few slides. This slide just shows you two graphs. One in, is the world emissions from fuel combustion, and the other one is the South African emissions. Now you can see those two graphs sort of move in tandem, more or less. If you sort of dig a bit deeper, you'll notice right at the top, the calculation shows that on average, South African emissions grew slightly faster than world emissions. Ours over this period grew at 2.3% per year, whereas world emissions grew at 1.8%. So we have still got emissions up to 2050 that has grown slightly faster than world emissions. Next graph. The other important point here is the issue of the business cycle. The graph on the left shows you the real GDP over the period, and that's on the left graph, it's sort of the yellowish line, and the blue line shows you emissions. So there's a very close relationship between growth in emissions and growth in GDP, given the energy intensive nature of our industry. Just before you move on, there's clearly a dip in emissions in South Africa and in the world in around about 2009 as a result of the world recession. In South Africa, the dip was slightly bigger, but it picked up again. And on the right side, you'll see percentage terms, a variation, which is just a reflection on what is on the left side, how these emissions fluctuate. So, Chair, the bottom line of this is that although emissions have slowed down as a result of the slowing in the growth, then all indications are that as the growth will pick up, emissions will pick up again. And if we don't take precautionary action, we will be facing a situation where we're behind the curve again. This slide just shows you where South Africa sits in terms of the emissions. On average, over the period 1990 to 2015, we were lying around about 14, 15, depending on which year you shoot, on the level of emissions and the percentage of world emissions. Next slide, please. I think this just summarizes what I've said in words. The last bullet point to me is important. South Africa's most recent slowdown in the absolute levels of greenhouse gas emissions is expected to reverse as soon as economic growth can recover. It would therefore be irresponsible to say we must do nothing and wait until growth recovers before we take action. Given the inaction to date and the relative growth in our GEOs, greenhouse gas emissions, the need for preemptive action is now more urgent than ever before. Thanks.
Thanks, sir. I think in light of that, based on some of the comments that we received, it's important to note that if you're looking at initiatives globally around carbon pricing, there's around 88 NDCs that countries have submitted to under the Paris Agreement that are planning or consider using carbon pricing instruments. This is supposed to cover around 56% of global emissions. If you're looking at a sort of more national, sub-national level, at a national level, there's around 45 jurisdictions that are looking at carbon pricing instruments, which is showing that the coverage is expanding quite significantly, and countries are starting to see the potential role and benefits for using a carbon pricing to achieve these reductions in emissions at a very, very low cost. So just in terms of some of the comments that we received on the carbon tax rate, there were strong comments that for us to actually effectively implement the polluter pays principle, the effective rate has to increase quite significantly in real terms. There's arguments that the proposed rate of 120 is well below the rates of other countries, which is true, and we need to also take into account that with the allowances that we propose, the rate of the tax effectively goes down. Some of the studies that reported show that the taxes range from around 40 to 80 US dollars per ton CO2 by 2020, etc. So it's considerably lower than the levels that would be required to fully internalize the cost of greenhouse gases. There were even suggestions that we should look at possibly increasing the rate of the tax in light of the initial proposal that was made in 2012. To adjust it for real terms. Our response on this is that we do note, and it is partially accepted. As mentioned, in the initial 2015 bill, one of the comments was that we should put in, the request that we put into the bill the rate of the tax, as well as how the tax is proposed to be adjusted over time to provide policy certainty. And Section 5 of the bill was amended to provide the explicit rate of 120 rand, as well as for the first phase that the tax will increase by up to a maximum of inflation plus 2%. There were also views that we should keep the tax rate fixed, obviously from different groupings, while others suggested that we should limit our adjustments. The view is that this is not accepted at this stage. We have provided for a phased approach to the introduction of the tax at a relatively modest rate initially to provide that price signal up front and then to allow sectors to basically make the investment and transition to a lower carbon standard.
Just to be clear, Chairs, for members, obviously some people feel, particularly some of the NGOs, environmental organizations, that the rate is too low because ours is sitting at $10, whereas they are looking at $40 at least. obviously, any businesses here will feel that it's too high. So we need to lower it. Aside from the issues of it needs to be fixed or stable over the long term. So you do get different perspectives.
So initially, when we published the 2013 carbon tax policy paper, and then the bill in 2015, there were requests for us to do modeling on the current design of the tax. There were previous studies done on the potential impact of the carbon tax. This was done by organizations like the World Bank, as well as an internal National Treasury study that was completed. Specifically on this version of the bill, there were comments around the underlying assumptions and that suggestions that the modeling overstates the benefit of implementing the tax. So just to briefly present, that in 2016, we published, National Treasury undertook a piece of work with the World Bank to consider the, to look at the impact of the tax on a carbon tax modeling exercise. And this study was, and this report was published, and it was workshopped and discussed with stakeholders in November 2016. At a very high level, the modeling considers a range of scenarios, and which is in the document. So it looks at various rates for the tax, it looks at the rates that the tax can be introduced at, and how the allowances are adjusted over time. And most importantly, it looks at ways in which the revenues can be recycled. Overall, it is found that the impact of the tax is vastly reduced if the revenues are recycled in an efficient manner. Just before we get into some of the results from that study, this slide is quite important. So it shows what has happened with real GDP over the period 1980 to 2017, and basically on average it has ranged between 2 and 2.5%. This is just important to remember for some of the high level results on the modeling. So the modeling that was done was it made certain assumptions, one of which was assuming the GDP growth of 2.5% from 2016 onwards, but it also looked at an alternative baseline of a more modest rate of increase in GDP by 2.4% for the period 2018 to 2035. The study found that the carbon tax can help to reduce emissions in the region of 13 to 14.5% by 2025 and 26 to 32% by 2035, compared to a business as usual setup. This is important because it aligns nicely with the targets that we set ourselves in terms of reducing emissions. But it also notes that the carbon tax would not be sufficient. It needs to be complemented by other instruments to help us achieve that target. On the longer term policy certainty and the timing of the introduction of the tax, again, there were different views. There was broadly support for the policy certainty that was provided. There were some requests around the lack of policy certainty beyond 2022, which is envisaged to be the first phase of the tax, and understandably how this would impact business decisions and future investments. There was also some views that the implementation date does not provide us with sufficient time in terms of addressing some of the admin challenges. On the other hand, there were views that given the significant delay in us implementing this tax and the need for us to address climate change and reduce emissions, and any further delays will be detrimental. And there were recommendations that we should implement this tax with immediate effect. So broadly, our response is that we note the comments. We try to provide policy certainty to the announcement in the budget 2018 for the 1st January 2019 implementation. And I think it's important to note that we are committed to doing a review of the carbon tax at least after 3 years of implementation, and that if we any adjustments to the tax, including the rates, will depend on the economic circumstances and the impact on emissions. So on the carbon budget is the policy proposal through the Department of Environmental Affairs, who is here with us today. And for the first phase, we propose the 5% allowance for those companies that voluntarily participate in the carbon budgeting system of VIA. And this allowance was to basically provide an incentive for industries to start to participate in this initiative, as well as provide good information and data that can help inform future budgets. The second issue was around post the first phase, which is envisaged after 2022, how would the carbon budget interface with the carbon tax? There were views around the potential duplication and of the two policies and the requirements from a reporting perspective, and how the carbon tax would overlap with the mandatory carbon budget that is expected to come into place a bit later. There were specific proposals and some support for, to the extent that we introduced we have the carbon tax and the carbon budget, that the carbon budget could apply on emissions above the carbon tax could apply on emissions above the level of the carbon budget that is determined by VIA. There were also suggestions that given that the carbon tax is a carbon pricing instrument, it can actually be implemented in parallel to a carbon budgeting system, and there may be no need for alignment of the two systems. So we've accepted the view around for the second phase to ensure full alignment between the carbon tax and the carbon budget, that the carbon tax can be implemented, and in our in principle view is that the carbon tax will apply to emissions above the level of the carbon budget approved by the Department of Environmental Affairs. I think what's important to note is that there are some concerns around the level of the budget to help us achieve the NDC that is set out. The budget should be introduced in a way to ensure that it's aligned in terms of the carbon tax and vice versa, and to ensure that there's no double penalty of having both the instruments in place. An integrated review process of these instruments will be done after 3 years of implementation of the carbon tax. I just want to hand over to my colleague Memory, and she'll talk through this slide. Thanks.
Thanks, Shannon. Thank you, Chair. Okay, so in terms of the revenue recycling measures that we've put forward within the carbon tax bill, we have introduced an energy efficiency saving tax incentive since November 2013. And business has actually been benefiting from this. And the comments were mostly around because it has a sunset clause, it's supposed to end in January 2020. So the stakeholders requested more of the certainty of can they expand this so that they can continue benefiting from it. And this has been partially accepted. We'll need to look at it because we're already in the process of wanting to review it, to look at who's benefiting, how can we improve the incentive. And this has, to date, I think, is almost 100 companies have been able to benefit from it, and it costs us almost 3 billion. So this is just a slide to show the different companies that have been benefiting, which industries they're coming from. So since November 2013 to, I guess, December 2017, we've been able to save about 5.9 terawatts of energy. And like I said, it costs the fiscus almost $3 billion. So, and then in terms of the liquid fuels, so South Africa is a player on the international scene in terms of international aviation and maritime. Those are emissions from those sectors are controlled in terms of international agreements. But in terms of the domestic sector, domestic emissions, they're supposed to be addressed through the UNFCCC mechanism, which means every country is supposed to incentivize reductions of those emissions. So for the aviation sector, we've indicated that we're going to include them in the domestic carbon tax system. And given that there is an international mechanism, a carbon offsetting mechanism at the international level that they, most of the airlines have to adhere to, with the way we are going to include this into the carbon tax net is we're going to try to align the way we include them in the carbon tax net to the international system, which is called the COSVIA. So in November 2017, we sent out a proposal of how we're going to include the domestic aviation sector within the carbon tax, and we've received comments from the sector, and we're just finalizing how we're going to include them within the carbon tax net, which basically is we're going to increase their tax-free threshold from the current 90% to 95%, and then we're going to adjust their carbon offset and performance allowances so that they can actually start adjusting to the international mechanism.
My colleague Yanga was for the left side from the topic.
I must like deal with the legal and administration of the carbon tax. Currently, all our environmental taxes are administered through the customs and excise tax. And carbon tax, the deal proposes it to be administered under the customs and excise tax. During the consultation process, there were issues, taxpayers rose concerns, raised concerns regarding the issue that the carbon tax is administered under the Customs and Excise Act. And some of the issues that they raised was that the definition of facility in the Customs and Excise Act. But we met with them on the 31st of May, and we advised them that EMSAS was present in the meeting during the consultation process. And we advise them that we're going to consider looking at the at clarifying the decision of facilities for carbon tax purposes. And I start here because I want us to talk about the rules, because taxpayers are not here regarding the rules. But we want to share with you that when SARS prepares the rules for administration of carbon, of customs and excise, the rules are published for public comment for 30 days. And SARS is here to tell you the process regarding the rules and how we're going to go about in assisting taxpayers to meet their demands on the issue of the definition of facility.
Thank you, Yanga. Essentially, the difficulty arises because reporting to VA is at a company level, and the Customs and Excise Act looks at licensing particular facility. So the question is, how do you reconcile the two? Now, as a fundamental point, SARS would say, well, you need to roll up those facilities to a company level, so it shouldn't be impossible. But accepting the concerns that have been raised by industry, what we're prepared to be looking at is looking at facilities that are spread over a significant geographic area. So you may have a facility that starts the process in one area and perhaps is linked by a pipeline or some other mechanism to another facility where the process concludes. Can you group that? And that's something we're certainly willing to look at. But that doesn't solve all the problem, because you may have multiple facilities. So then comes the question, can you stack facilities in a licensing environment? And that's also something we're willing to look at. So if you go down the road of grouping and stacking, we think you get very close to the company level in any event, and that's something we're willing to explore with industry. Around the question of rules, we're in a difficult position because if we start drafting rules and putting them out for comment, we're almost preempting the parliamentary process. So we have to tread sensitively here. But as Yanga has pointed out, we always put out our rules for public comments. We consider those comments and then they get worked into the final proposed rules that are put through. Once I have the microphone, perhaps I should just move on to the next slide, and that's the payment of tax. Here, the question is, how should we pay the tax? The current proposal is on a 6-monthly basis. And so one of the suggestions that was made is that we should align it more closely with the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Royalty, which surprised us a little because they were pretty strongly aligned as we sit here, but you know, that's certainly something we're prepared to look at a bit more. But more fundamentally, that there was a proposal that we instead do it on a purely annual basis. That's a bit of a taller ask because it makes the revenue flow lumpy both for the as an expenditure item for the company and as a receipt for government. But that is also something that we'd be looking at in conjunction with the Treasury.
The last slide is dealing with the legal aspects that were raised on the drafting of the carbon tax bill. Issues on the definition. I must say those issues are more technical in nature. We're going to look at them, and then when we revise the bill, we're going to take the fair comments into account. And I think Shani will talk about the regulation.
Thanks, I think just to add, we were just picked out the big definitions that were proposed by stakeholders, and mainly the comment was that we need to align the definitions that we have in the carbon tax bill with the definitions that are used in the mandatory reporting regulation of the Department of Environmental Affairs. And for the carbon budget, definition of a carbon budget, definition of fugitive emissions and greenhouse gas emissions, we are looking to align as closely as possible with the DR regulation. There were comments on the allowances, not from a policy perspective, but in that some of the allowances, the language used was may, which appeared may qualify from an industry perspective, and the suggestion was that we should replace may with must. So it's just a small issue. I think just importantly on this slide is that for waste sector activities and emissions, currently there is an anomaly in the bill. So waste sector emissions that is covered under combustion related emissions is taxed, while those that are covered under actual waste sector emissions from a reporting perspective is excluded. So we are looking at ways to address that anomaly in the bill. And then lastly, by way of an update, is complementary to the bill, we have three sets of regulations that are seen to as part of the legislative framework. On the carbon offset and the trade exposure regulation, we have engaged extensively with industry. On the carbon offset, we put out a draft regulation in June 2016 for public comments. We engaged during 2016-2017 with stakeholders on issues including the scope of the offsets that can be eligible for use by different sectors and activities, as well as the administration system. So the revised carbon offset regulation, which has been completed, includes more details on the scope as well as the envisaged administration system, and we are hoping to put that out and finalize by the end of September. On the trade exposure allowance regulation, we are also a draft has been completed, and we'll try to put that out very soon for a round of public comment and then finalization by September 2018. The third set of regulations is that we provide for a performance allowance that industries can qualify for, provided that they perform better than a benchmark. In 2014, industry was requested to develop these benchmarks because it's difficult for government to, we don't have access to the correct information to set the benchmark. So the request was put to industry to develop these benchmarks,
and submit them to the Treasury for consideration. Over the last year, the number of submissions from industry has increased quite considerably, and we have around 10, 11 proposals for benchmarks. As part of the next step, we will review these benchmarks under a project that we are undertaking with the World Bank, the Partnership for Market Readiness Project, and we will then draft regulations and publish these for comments. So that's broadly the, an update on some of the legal aspects and the regulations.
Just with the document that I submitted to you today, we submitted a more detailed draft response document. And just for members to note, the way we do it with tax policy is we obviously have the hearings and we see draft carbon tax where the response document. So that goes into it in a bit more detail. The PowerPoint obviously was just a summary of that. What we then do is once the hearing, we get a feel obviously of the response of the committee, it's then taken into account the law, the actual draft bill may be changed, and then the Minister of Finance formally tables the bill. So that's just the normal tax process. It works differently to other bills where the bill is introduced or is tabled back at the start. I just thought I would say that members of the Environmental Affairs. Thank you, Chair.
Well done. I want to thank you and your team. I've told you from the local language, and I that I will be able to process this and share that side, and this will be in line with the policy, as should be the case, because the strange people are here for the first time. When we work on a bill that involves the policy of the employer, as far as possible, we confer with that committee, in this case, Environment Fund. But the parliamentary rules of the Constitution, I think, also require money bills to be only processed, only voted on by the Finance Committee. Now, we work informally, but when it comes to the final stage of voting, the Finance Committee does that. So, we also don't pretend that we know the policy issues in every sector. There are 27 policies here, I'm correct. So the first part of the way we manage these things, often it's the policy committee that deals with the issues. I'm here mainly to deal with the process issues. But obviously, we will, in the constituency period, and before we come back next in August, work through ourselves on the policy. So in respect of the process, I just want some guidance from the committee, bearing in mind that people have got to leave by 5 and they have flights and so on, because tomorrow many of them work outside to work. So basically what I'm asking, do you want a reply from the stakeholders first, then we look at both sides, what Treasury has said in response to them, what they are saying in response to Treasury, or you want to first deal with Treasury issues, what is the guidance you give them, what would you like? Does anybody have any views?
Claire? I just want to clarify, if we go with the option of hearing the stakeholders first before we can respond to Treasury, does that mean there's a possibility that our responses to Treasury would only come after this recess period?
No,
you
come
back.
I
will still argue.
Yes, it's just that what some of us like, and I'm guided by the majority, is to hear both sides, because some of the questions we put to Treasury may be answered by the stakeholders. Moreover, Treasury speaks from the point of a department. So that's its perspective. We're not a department. We have to take into account what the department says and what civil society to whom we are answerable also. In fact, theory, that's the public. Of course, it's often contested because the power wielders, the big players who turn up in Cape Town, not the marginalized and peripheralized, they don't turn up here. So it's unfortunate that these public hearings, what they do is they reinforce the
voice of the power entities, like whether they're in NGOs or whether they're in business. But I'm saying that that may be a mistake. In your hands, Gwen and others here, what are we going to do? I would like to say that we hear this and then we have a discussion on the whole. Not just in our whole, we can't have a moment, we're going to take that. Are you agreeable with that? Okay, is anybody else who disagrees? Okay. So let's hear you. Now, in the first instance, there are people who hear the public hearing, who make submissions, and they've responded to you. Right, does anybody want to speak from your side? Oh, great, nobody wants to speak. So I take it you all agree with this. Oh, sorry, yes. And tell us who you are and who you represent.
Chair, we would like the opportunity, as you have indicated, we did speak the last time, so we're not asking for an opportunity to speak again, but what we will do is review these comments and provide your opinion. Just listening to the presentation, there are a large number of issues which have not been addressed. And in some of them, the way in which they see the technique is often very good. But the reason is not the right.
Yeah.
Beyond just maybe an announcement on the website, because the parliamentary agenda changes quite often. I mean, even committee members have to keep on top of the
ball. My brother here couldn't wait yesterday because of the movie. But that was 3 weeks ago. It was on the website. Mm-hmm. And Alan normally manages that, as far as I know. But you know, we are all averted as well. So it's possible. But here we are. I mean, the NGOs, no NGOs. Okay. So can you speak? Yeah. Start to write. So one. Two at the back, Professor. Three, four. We can give you up to like 7 minutes right under the time. And then we will write to us 7 minutes are running up. So tell us your initial response.
And
thank
then
you.
I'll hand
thank you, Chair. The initial response I'm going to deal with in respect of the slide. First one that we have engaged many times on this matter of the model, the economic model.
Yeah.
the sense of humanity is that the recycling that has been presented in slide 18, that recycling, those provisions for recycling are not in the bill. So we are not aware that they will actually happen. We recognize the recycling that is in the bill, that it is only there as far as we can see for 3 years. The maximum would be 2022. Our time frame for making investment decisions is such that we need a much longer horizon of certainty. 3 years is very, very short. We have investigated, and if you would find this helpful, Chair, we will provide you with written submissions on that. We have investigated, particularly of multinationals, where they have to get approval from the board in another country, so to speak. They cannot get approval. The money is there. They cannot get approval because they don't know what will happen after 3 years in the second half. So wherever you have a company that is carbon intensive, and as you know, historically, Chair, we have a number of such companies because that's the way our economy was built. Of course, we must phase out and away to that to lower carbon. We understand that. But we can't work overnight. And this bill is going to destroy investment, which we need desperately now. Our view, we think that it's imperative that we reach agreement about where we are as a country in respect of the national determined contribution. Our data, which using the government data, our analysis shows that we are well within the national determined contribution. Treasury is saying we are not, we are above it. Now that is a matter of fact, Chair, that we really believe we need to reach common ground on, and we're very happy to work with Treasury to share our data, because we can't be arguing about something that in our view is essentially a fact. It's not a policy question, it's a fact that our emissions are at a particular level. So that's a discussion that we would like to consider. We have had a discussion on the model many times, and we don't agree with it. We've never seemed to be able to get to an agreement. Chair, for us, we are the only country in the world.
Sorry, can I ask? Sorry to interject. can I ask? You said there's some companies which would require approval from. Basically, they are international companies. They are listed outside of the country. Which companies are those? Because my understanding is that most of the biggest companies or most of the big producers are South African-based companies. They are not international companies. Maybe if you can just listen.
I can't list it off my head, but we can certainly provide you with such. But the same applies to a domestic company. A domestic company itself has a longer horizon than 2 years for making an investment decision. If they want to invest 10 billion rand today, they want to know that that investment is not going to be useful after 2 years. It's a question of how the investment decisions are made. But we can provide you with in writing what we tell you. But if you look at the environment of the carbon budget, we are the only country in the world that is considering imposing a carbon budget, which is a cap, essentially, like it's mandatory to be a cap, and a carbon tax on the same company. There are many countries that have both of those instruments, but they do not impose both instruments on the same company. The alignment of those two instruments, therefore, is an clearest of part of the design. We see no reason, because the government is telling us, and the sides are telling us, that DEA and Treasury have been engaging on this together for 2 years. We see absolutely no reason for them not to reach that alignment and put it into the design which is in this book. We can't understand why it's not possible. Chair, we accept that energy efficiency savings incentive is something that's useful. We, as you can see, we make a lot of use of it, but it's no use telling us you've got the standard of incentives when incentives keep here as a result. It's, and the world is going on as the DPG has said, with the bill is here to stay. He's not talking about removing the bill. Then the matter of there's a number of other matters of duplication of taxation, which carbon taxation, which has not been responded to here, but I assume it's in the detailed report. If you tax liquid fuels and you continue to impose a carbon tax on vehicles, you are, which is the cause of using the vehicle, you are taxing double. When we had some challenges on the introduction of the carbon tax on vehicles, it was told to us that there would be consideration given to repealing that carbon tax when there was a carbon tax more generally. That is not being as we thought. To the administration, we accept that we had a very good engagement with FARC and with
Roundup.
Yes, I'll just deal with the administration, Chair. We are working with Treasury and FARC to try to reach what we would see as a practical and not significantly onerous of administrative burden in implementation. And in the fullness of time, I'm sure they will provide you with that. Thank you.
No question, I'm losing, yeah. You really interrogate me, right? That's one of the main issues, interrogation. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be very brief.
There's another professor also at the back, so when you ask for NGOs, just to bring to your attention. And I should add, you should also ask these professors if they believe that there's climate change.
No.
If they don't, then there's no point in the world.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying. It's uncalled for and irregular, and I'm going to slap you down, right? It's wrong. Let people speak their mind. Take part in you. Professor, you've got up to 7 minutes maximum.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I think the simple fact of the matter is that if you look at what the world is doing around the Paris Agreement, is being ignored, not being obeyed. And so we've got to ask the question of whether we should be alone in trying to obey the Paris Agreement. Why we should be making financial demands on ourselves that others are not prepared to make. China, for instance, its emissions are going up by more than South Africa's total every year, right now. They're building something of the order this week of another 12 coal-fired power stations. The world is not going along the Paris Agreement. And I have to ask very strongly as to why we have to follow them, why we have to honour this obligation as strongly as what we're apparently trying to. I know that it sounds like a very good idea, but from my own research, evidence suggests that the influence of climate change is not nearly as severe as many would like it to be, and many proposed as it is, I would merely rest and say, do not let us commit an economic suicide in order to save the world, and the rest of the world is not really willing to join us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Somebody else wants to speak, Kotatu, I think. We'll allow you to speak, sir, the microphone, and the lady behind, and then the stuff. With one, 2, 3, 4. 5. It doesn't matter the sequence. Right. Quickly, please.
Sure,
I'm looking at 7 minutes thinking there's fewer people. It's a bit unfair now, but can you knock it down to 5? But fine.
Thanks, Chair. I think I can be 3 minutes. My name is Matthew from Kotatu. Look, I think, Chair, let me just first agree with Comrade Momo that Kotatu agrees that climate change is a crisis. You don't need to look further than Cape Town with the water crisis, or even look at Mpumalanga with various issues there, or Gauteng, etc., for acid mine water, and so on. Chair, look, I won't go into too much detail because we had made submissions previously to the committee during the public hearings about 2 months ago, 3 months ago. I think our sense is that we're worried that workers and jobs specifically will become the victims of government's action and industry's inaction. we have got, after much pressure from our side, a meeting at Redlec on the 19th of June with the Minister of Economic Development and one other minister. Just try to hear from government's industry jobs plan. We're hoping that will begin the process of government, industry, labour finding each other on this critical issue. Chair, I don't think we're really qualified to argue about technicalities of pathology. Our simple thing is to hear about a jobs plan from government and industry. We agree with Momo that there are green opportunities to create jobs, especially in water and so on. The crisis is across all economic indicators. I think we're also sensitive to that the pending trade imperative with Europe, for example, which are going to start imposing these requirements for exports coming in. So we need to plan proactively. Our concern, really, in conclusion, Chair, is that we think government has got great appetite for taxes. We know Momo is very energetic about taxes. But we're concerned, Chair, that other colleagues in government don't have the same energy levels to create jobs, to come with a jobs plan. And there's no transition plan, Chair. But to be honest, we've seen in the capital water crisis how government at all levels sleep until there's a crisis. But yeah, really, Chair, what is the win-win inclusive transitional plan? And we think the state, the resources in government, from the UAF fund to the PIC to the IDC, that we can all pull together and make a success under this opportunity. But we don't agree that we can afford to keep on the job of the country, Chair. Thanks.
Okay, the lady with the glasses behind me.
Thank you so much, Chair.
And
yes,
it is. Maybe it's not working here. Hello, Silas. Are you my brother?
Thank you, Honourable Chairman. My name is Ziggy Spenek, representing ArcelorMittal South Africa. National Treasury has singled out the cement sector and the iron and steel sector as severely affected sectors within the carbon tax regime. But then to only hear that there is a trade exposure allowance is not satisfactory. For instance, within the iron and steel sector, even if we get the full trade allowance, our earnings could still be totally eroded. Now, I don't think that is a sustainable situation. Thank you.
Okay, fine. There's nobody on this side enough. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Gina Downs, representing Eskom. I hope my comments aren't taken personally. They are purely on the technical merits of the discussion and not aimed at anybody individually. Because, Chair, we've been discussing this since 2010. No, so I'm friends with most people in this room. I think the two issues, and thank you to Treasury, they have always taken our comments into consideration, not always addressed them in the way we would like. Needless to say, they do have many stakeholders' inputs to balance. I do accept that. From the electricity sector, however, in particular, our concern is that, and I think it's just a matter of timing, that the integrated resource planning process already adopted a carbon constraint at a time when we just started discussing this carbon tax proposal. And so some of the projected emission savings and some of the economic models that have been spoken about are already achieved purely by the integrated resource plan from 2010, shows a 34% decline in greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. And as a result, there was a very successful LEAP program, which Eskom was a partner in, is a partner in still. And as a result, there are certain costs incurred in the electricity tariff. And part of the whole economic theory of a tax as a market instrument, as a financial instrument to get South Africa on this right road, is to increase the price of carbon-intensive goods, at which at this time electricity is one. That is happening quite successfully just via the implementation of the integrated resource plan. And National Treasury did come to the party and admit that this does exist and accepted to put a renewable energy premium rebate into the draft bill. We were just very disappointed to see that our 20-year contract with the REAP procurement, which lasts to 2038, and the bill are only recognized to 2022. And the commitment to price neutrality in the short term is very welcome, but there is a significant impact on the price of electricity from 2023 that should be taken into consideration. And our second point is to the alignment with carbon budgets. We feel that carbon budgets do deliver a much more certain environmental outcome in that they do provide an absolute cap. We think the two instruments work very well together and would rather see this integrated system being implemented from the get-go, the difficulty being the tax implementation is spoken from 2019, the end of the first phase 2022, and the carbon budgeting system should be a mandatory system from 2021 to 2025 would be the first phase. So for us, the technical practicality of that overlap is difficult to understand how that would be reconciled. Thank you, Chair.
Can we done, right? Anybody? Good. So I'll hand over now to the
Okay, thank you very much. I'm not sure whether shouldn't we give Treasury and the Department before we get members to engage. Probably let's get the initial response from the department and then we'll allow members to interrogate the response.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, just to make the point, I think in the first instance, the objective here is to get the bill through. I think that we've said as a separate process we can look at the levy and or the date of implementation and so on. That was the position when we brought the bill. Now, if you want to look at the entire impact of policy, you will not get it alone just from this bill. That's why we put forward, you know, the levy will have to be brought down. For example, it could be when we look at the incentives that are there. Currently they're there for 3 years. I don't think we have any issue likely to be sort of extended. Now I understand that at some point before when we introduce the bill, the minister will come with a final or his proposed date of introduction. We can certainly provide the full picture. That's been sketched out before, but we'll need to do that again so that the exact impact can be seen. When we did this here, I mean, obviously some of these factors were taken into account in our discussions with them. I think that so yes, the bill itself is not going to provide all the information. Secondly, I do think that when we deal with the text, and I do not say this lightly, we will not reach an agreement with many parties. Lorraine is my friend, let me be clear, I'm not captured. But we've had many, many engagements, very robust engagements with her. I respect her and Buddha, but I do think that they will never, ever support not just this text or any text. I asked her earlier, just joked with her and said, which text would you want us to increase? To get fired as a Busa representative, even if she did agree. So I think you must take their views, not with a pinch of salt, but I think that, and that's the difficulty of text policy, because people say there's going to be doom and gloom, and they may well be right, or they may be wrong, and the hard issue is for us to assess how much is lobbying, because their position would be there should be no tax or it should be at zero, and how much, you know, we do have to make a judgment call. Yes, it will have some impact on certain sectors, certain industries, but there's also opportunities of other industries that come in. So the bill itself doesn't answer all the questions, and whilst I take what Lorraine had to say, I do think that also, not all issues are going to be sorted out 100%. I don't want to fight with ESCOM, but I think they too need to fall in line with government policy. There was the issue of the renewal RFPs. And those are important discussions to have, but I think to the extent that we have the test, will be largely the only instrument in the initial phase. And the approach that we're taking is we do want it to apply for 3 years. We're not saying it will go away. We're saying that after 3 years, we should see to what extent we've succeeded in making our emissions targets. Yeah, maybe we've made some of it just because there's been such low growth. But, you know, if you look at the Paris Agreement, part of it is we should be prepared to tighten given our initial submission that we have, because we are running against the clock, and I think that to the extent that we are doing better than we projected, fine, but that doesn't mean that therefore we should relax. So I don't know if you want to add on to any other specific points that it made. And yeah, I do think, and I don't say this flippantly, it is important. A person will be against the text if you don't believe in climate change. Okay. So it's quite important, you know, people appear, you know, what their position is on climate change. Do they see it as a risk? If you don't believe that climate change is a problem and it's a figment of someone's imagination, and President Trump, I think, thinks so. Not that I think we want to follow him in any way, I hope not. But if you don't believe in climate change, then there's no rationale for the carbon tax.
Thank you.
So, yeah. All right. Do you want to say any points?
Yes,
and our colleagues from here, I think, should come in.
Yeah, I see what the fellow here. Maybe you can comment on one or two things.
Just very quickly on the revenue recycling point. I mean, in a lot of other instances we do revenue recycling, but we don't put it in the actual bill. And I mean, here, for example, we've already got an energy efficiency savings tax incentive that's in, and it's in the income tax, and it doesn't need to be put in again in the bill. And there are many other instances where we say there will be revenue allocated. So, for example, we didn't change this. We adjusted the medical tax credit to, in effect, make additional revenue this year. We didn't put it in the bill, but it is a line item under the Department of Health budget, so it is there. We do say it's going to be there, and we will stick to the decisions that we've made, but it doesn't need to be in the current legislation in our view.
Anybody from here? I think the issue that was not being responded to is the alignment in the carbon budget, which I guess on slide 32, but there are still no questions that have been raised, but I guess later on we'll respond to it. Anybody from here? You want to come to alignment, okay?
Thank you, Chair. Not on the alignment.
Thank you,
Chair. Just to add to what is in the slide is that on the actual alignment of the carbon budget and the carbon tax, there was a study that was done with the Treasury and the Department of Environment looked at, and it looked at the various options for integration and alignment of the two instruments, especially in the second phase of the carbon tax and with the mandatory carbon budget. I think it's important to say that in principle, it was viewed that the alignment could be achieved by having the tax apply above the level of the budget, the mandatory budget that is approved by the Department of Environmental Affairs for a company. As mentioned already in the presentation, the issue would be around the what level the budget is set at. This budget could replace the allowances under the carbon tax. The discussion around the design of the carbon budget, which Leah can talk a little bit about, and the alignment with the elements of the carbon tax, of design of the carbon tax, is where we need to provide further clarity. But in principle, the position is that the tax would apply above the level of the approved budget on the company.
Thank you, Chair. Treasury has just said, we are fully aligned in terms of our position on that. Chair, I just wanted to respond to the issues that were raised around the tariffs argument, particularly the view that there is a great deal of countries that are walking away from the tariffs argument. If anything, Chair, the opposite is correct. There are more countries that are aligning themselves to the tariffs agreement, including the business and civil society, that are aligning themselves to the achieving the objective of the tariffs agreement. And just to give you a figure, Chair, to date we've got about 172 countries that have signed up to the Paris Agreement out of 196 countries, and that figure is rising daily. So I just wanted to deal with the issue that countries are running away from the Paris Agreement. And on China specifically, Chair, in fact, China, if you compare the contribution of China, which is called the National Human Contribution, to South Africa's own NDC, you see, Chair, there that China ranks a little bit more above us, meaning that we need to do more than what we are doing now in terms of raising our own ambitions. So I just wanted to add, Chair, that the Paris Agreement is the future, and more countries are busy joining that, and South Africa is fully behind the Paris Agreement. It's committed to attaining its long-term objective goals of stabilizing greenhouse gas emissions and building resilient economies and societies. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Can we engage? Honourable members? We'll start with Sandy there, and Honourable Member, next to Honourable Khaled. Gwen. My apologies, you are not serving the committee, so I don't know one of the members, Honorable Makuvele. Those are the three hands.
I need to make this anecdote. I get simply bored if I don't hear substantive new arguments that juxtapose against an argument that has been tabled. That's why I get simply bored. And it becomes a little laborious process for me if I want to listen to an intellectual engagement that substantiates an argument and I don't find it. And I'm sorry about that. You see, I thought I was going to hear NGOs telling us something different from what we heard last time. But there's nothing. But what is interesting is to listen to ESCOM immediately after the Arsenal has presented. That becomes very interesting. Because you see, if ArcelorMittal bans more electricity, ESCOM increases tariffs. Either way, you need to have a punitive measure for those that doesn't adhere to acceptable principles. And to the extent where I believe it's like we're holding a begging dish and say to people don't emit, and I'm going to make an example. At some point in my previous life, I used to chair defense. And we were putting a law against cluster munitions and certain unconventional rules of engagement in a war environment where rebels will particularly the Janjaweed, if you know the Janjaweed, will behave in an unconventional way towards their enemy. We had a try in South Africa at that time to decide whether we're not going to legislate against utilization of cluster munition. Maybe let me explain what cluster munition is. Cluster munition is a weapon that when dispersed, it opens up and shoots more other little dangerous weapons. So it's a very, very dangerous weapon if it's utilized. So there was a treaty that this must not be utilized in warfare. And we had a choice whether to keep it or to say we should be an example as South Africa to legislate against utilization of cluster munitions. And there were those who were arguing that why do we do it when the Americans are not doing it? And we said because we are a caring nation in South Africa and we want to be an example, and we have to do it. So for any argument to say that because China is not doing it, we should not do it, it's very yesterday. Questions come from a professor, and now you think that was an issue with the professor. I got an issue with the views of the professor, because I went to China, and I'm not talking ill about China. I went to China. I thought it was going to rain. I think it was pollution. It was so dark, I thought it's cloudy. And somebody said, no, it's a normal day when it's so dark, it's pollution in the air. So maybe the professor wants us to address a situation like this in South Africa, where during the day it's very dark, you think it's going to rain, you can see we are going to die, we are inhaling bad air, and so on. And that's what he said, basically, that no, let's ignore it, just continue to die and so on, and it's normal, you see. Because we have come to a point where we think that when we engage people's opinions, it means that their opinions must not be put to test in terms of their relevance. And that's when I don't take kind to a situation where we just absorb anything, even if we know it's detrimental to our health, to our living conditions and so on, to a point that, Momo, it's not even about the issue of taxation. It's to me an environmental issue that we address first, and taxation becomes a tool to try and minimize that. Maybe that's what we are not explaining, why we tax, we are applying a carbon tax. We are trying to discourage companies to emit dangerous emissions. And look how nice we are as the South African government. Say, if you budget for it, we incentivize good people. And people say, no. It's double taxation. Let me explain what is double taxation. You bring a car that is going to create a problem, we tax it. plus you put fuel on it, we take it. Actually, we should be having 3 times. That's what we call discouragement. You see? Then you will know how to do the right thing. Now, we go all over haywire and so on, and we're not giving adequate, substantive examples why it's detrimental to the environment. That if we don't implement it, we survive. I did not have that argument, and to the extent that argument is not there, I will not listen to such a view. Momo, nobody likes tax. We know that it's not a debate. The debate that you allow people to tell us is that how much? Is it too much? Is it too little? The thing is, it's going to happen. We want them to tell us the model of doing it, because doing it is going to happen, but is it too much? Is it too little? Over how long can we do that? So I think maybe we should be saying somewhat in that manner, that then we can have a good debate. For now, I'll finish. Thanks.
So my first point, and I know the chair's already said that someone's gone, so just again to reiterate that, you know, this is a deeply technical and complex matter, and to receive a response from the market before, you know, one would ideally like to, even as ourselves as members, to take it back to, you know, really some of the compelling arguments we've seen before in some of the public hearings, and have a real discussion even before we come to this sort of thing with some of those parties to say what do you think of the responses, and so we come here with a more comprehensive view, and we haven't had the opportunity to do that. That being said, some of the issues I'd like to raise is regarding firstly the socioeconomic assessment. So now some of my comments, because they I'm really responding to what Treasury has just said, I think will come across as being saying quite a few, most of the concerns relate to and not appear to be against the carbon tax, and that's not the position of the Democratic Alliance at this point in time. I think we still are also discussing amongst ourselves trying to balance the environmental considerations with the economic considerations, but I think just my comments today will make it seem like I'm slightly more against it than perhaps I might intend. I just thought I'd put that disclaimer first. So the first is the concerns about the socioeconomic impact, and the concern there is that it seems that, you know, we view this as a one-time obligation to be discharged at the beginning. So we've done a socioeconomic impact or that kind of assessment, but it doesn't seem to be part of the thinking of the ongoing review. So what I hear from the responses is that we will review the tax based on, well, one, our international obligations or agreements, and whether or not emissions continue to rise. If emissions continue to rise, we will simply increase the responsibility and will then increase the rate. There was nothing about we're actually going to do further, so periodically continue to check on the economic effects. I mean, our commitments are not just trade commitments. We have commitments to South Africans to grow the economy, and so I think there needs to be a holistic sort of criteria that must be part of that review process, not just whether or not it's being effective in terms of bringing down emissions. And particularly because the effect on emissions is dependent on a variety of criteria. And from there, maybe I'll speak a little bit about the modelling itself. What we usually get presented with are then the results of the models, whereas we all very well know that models are often supported by very strong assumptions. And so some of those assumptions in terms of what the impact might be would be related to, for example, the ease with which that would be able to push towards replacement technology. So the substitutability of our current, a requirement more greener or other types of resources or the fuel that we consume. And I think that, and so for example, so the first one is the ability to which we're able to actually substitute replacement technologies. And the other big assumption I'd assume when looking at the impact is the ability with which we're able to harness the green economy and create jobs for the economy. But those are two very big ifs for an economy like that, so there's no guarantee that we do have sufficient alternative replacement technologies that will be able to substitute timely.
In fact, if you look at countries that are as carbon heavy or carbon reliant as we are, they often don't, in fact, switch very easily. So what happens is that your emissions levels remain just as high, and what happens is the energy costs rise in response because it's not that easy to substitute. And I don't think I'm convinced by the evidence of our sort of preparedness for substitution. We just seem to expect that in response to the tax and the private sector will accordingly, or the market will accordingly shift their consumption. I'm not sure that's entirely the case. And similarly with the green economy, we've seen that automatically the jobs lost in the one area that are linked to our current carbon consumption will automatically move to a green economy without proper analysis of what's required for that substitution to take place. So I think these are very big ifs for the African economy, and I think we need to keep those in mind continuously, not just as an initial study that was charged at the beginning, but continuously throughout the process. And I think we also need to, in terms of that modeling, to also consider, for example, that the last point on the modeling is that it seems to be quite heavily based on baseline growth projections and not really playing towards sectoral analysis. And I think the reason why it's stressful place emphasis on sectoral analysis is the fact, well, the often hand-set sectors are being given allowances, so it seems that that has happened. Certainly not a comprehensive sectoral analysis. Just very recently, a colleague of ours, the VAs asked in the tourism portfolio whether, what the impact of this carbon tax would be. And there was a response that no assessment had necessarily been done. Now, I mean, you may want to correct that, but that was the view that we received. And that's in consideration against the fact that tourism continues to be one of the strong growth sectors in the country, and the impact this might have on domestic tourism. And obviously that the impacts are not just about the initial cost, the initial outlay that would be impacted, but rather that there's a multiplier effect, the effect in one area is likely to spread to other companies and sites that are directly linked to the tourism industry, and especially with travel. So the point to make there is that the effects on growth are not as likely to be in percentage terms. I mean, that's obviously an interesting piece of information or data to have as a percentage impact on economic growth. But what would also be interesting is the impact in terms of how such a tax is likely structurally reshaped by economy. So it might mean that our economy might have to move away from being first into the front sectors to others. And how prepared are we exactly for that? Especially if there's maybe preliminary evidence suggests there might be some shift away from domestic tourism, if that cannot afford the increased cost or impact the carbon tax might have, to perhaps less labour-intensive industries that aren't so reliant on carbon, on carbon emissions. And so I don't see that structural the assessment of how it's likely to structurally reshape the economy also being taken into consideration. Another point we made is that, we've consulted a great deal of data on both sides of the argument. And when I say both sides, I don't just mean the economic impacts. I mean, even right down to the actual environmental debate, climate change itself, the efficacy of carbon tax measures. And I think, truth be told, there's some pretty strong research on all sides of these debates. And so I think that it would be fair to say that some of these, at the end of the day, the consideration will not just be a technical one. We're not necessarily going to find the answer in the data and the numbers. That to some extent, a decision such as this is a policy or political decision. And for that reason, I think if it does go ahead, what must be borne in mind is perhaps the need for policy to go through an iterative process, that because we are uncertain of the results, and there's strong evidence on both sides to say that there's contradictory sort of forecasts about what the effects might be. For that reason, it's worth having an iterative approach, meaning that, as has been suggested, there would be a review period. But the problem with this review period is that it's not really an iterative approach. An iterative approach ideally should allow you to both go forward or to increase a policy measure or go the opposite direction. This review only allows you to go up. So if emissions don't come down, we will increase the rate. There's no provision that to
if after we've implemented this and actually the sort of the forecast about it having a detrimental impact on the economy are in fact the results that are borne out, how will we go back? There's no provision for that. And so I think more detail needs to be provided about the ability for us to review these international obligations. What is the possibility of an exit if one was if one was necessary? And so I think that it's important to view the review process as a genuine review process. If the only way a review process can go is in one direction, then it's not a genuine review of the policy. And perhaps just to reiterate there again that, you know, this doesn't come down to, I think, it was Tracy who was saying this, that you first make the decision about whether you believe in climate change or not. Yes, that's one consideration, but I think an equally important one is our obligations in terms of the country, in terms of our international obligations, and the fact that we were quite late to the industrial revolution, and that we are in a low-growth environment, and so our obligations internationally must be reflective of our particular growth path, and I don't know if they always are. And that such a review needs to take that into account, so that our obligations need to be fair comparatively. I would then perhaps lastly just wish to say that in terms of policy certainty, I mean, at this point this seems to be more of an aspiration than the reality, and I mean, a huge part of the policy certainty is actually when to become into effect and implementation date, and we've heard that it's unlikely to come into effect on the date that has actually been suggested, and I think there needs to be, well, we need to move the policy certainty from this being an aspirational point to one that's actually a core to reality. At the moment, in terms of the research that's been done, in terms of the modelling of the timing, and almost all areas, I doubt whether all parties would be agreed there's certainty at that. I don't think there's certainty in the market. That's not the feedback we've been receiving. And then lastly, just to say that we need to allow my... Sorry, I know, this is not really just the last point. I just remember the point from ESCOM that there needs to be coordination between, I think, ESCOM and Treasury. I mean, it's quite jarring to hear a presentation from ESCOM, I mean, from Treasury that says that there will be little, effect in terms of electricity prices. But then from ESCOM to hear a slightly different view that, well, that's really quite in the short term, and the long term, there's a significant impact on energy prices. And I think there needs to also be an alignment between the methods that we're receiving there. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Mokure. That was quite a long submission. But of course, today we allow it. We allow this submission. Our Honourable Mokure and I are also not going to make a long submission.
No, it's literally not so long.
Okay.
First is for me, I think that there has been a laborious process of engagement and interaction with the stakeholders and so on, and this response the issues that were raised being responded to today are a result of all of that compromises made and some considerations that have given issues that have been taken on board. But as South Africa, we are resolute in terms of the work to do based on the NDC and in terms of the need for carbon tax, carbon budget and so on. I don't think that necessarily still a debate whether we should move ahead or proceed with that or not. I think we are at that point where the debate is supposed to be processed. And perhaps the first thing would be this deal, because of the reason we have, it has triggered certain things or some gaps within other pieces of legislation. with regard to ourselves in terms of the definition of activities or whatever, whatever. All that one needs to know is, as you be able to identify most of those policy gaps and or gaps within other legislation, so that as and when this is passed, would know what else needs to be improved. And so as if you have scanned enough and you are able to advise us that our parents will do our part. But also in the same time, we have to check with you whether these gaps as they might have been identified, do they pose a loophole in that, to the extent that effective implementation of this may be the challenge. But for me, my take on the argument that the tax is too low and so on is needed to be higher, I just think it that we need it for a start and we needed to start somewhere. And I don't think that radicalism was going to be so useful in this particular example. It may sound nice to want to be a guy and so on, but I don't think it is progressive. We need to take it as it is for now and proceed to the extent to which these people can't behave, companies can't behave, and I'm not sure there's any incentive. We are able to move higher. If it means as South Africa we can provide that leadership so that we don't always look up to other countries, whether it's China or whatever, let's provide that leadership. We shouldn't be in a situation where we don't have confidence to lead the world. We must be able to do that if we can. As long as it's in the interest of our own country, we're not able to do so.
Okay, thank you. I think we must not lose sight of where we are now. now there was a public hearing where stakeholders had an opportunity to present on the issues that they have got issues with regarding this bill. Those issues were then referred back to Treasury, and now Treasury is coming back to give us feedback on those issues. So the process is not starting afresh. So as we debate these issues, we must understand that the process is quite advanced. In fact, I don't understand why there are still conversation around this issue, because this is 8 years in the making, since 2010 when the presentation was published. Now, it simply demonstrates that there will never be an agreement at some point. The issue is just for us to have a middle ground. Because as you can see here, WWF is saying that this threshold, the tax that is being proposed, is too low. On the one extreme. On the other extreme, USA is still contesting the tax, saying that there's some still uncertainty around certain issues that is not going to facilitate decision making on the investment that needs to be done. But I think everybody else must understand that as a country we need to move forward. This parliament in 2016 ratified the Paris Agreement. We ratified the Paris Agreement, we submitted the instrument of ratification to the UN extra-proceed. So we are way past whether we must agree or we must not agree. So Parliament has ratified as a country
we have submitted our instrument. And we have also submitted our national settlement contribution. So we must comply with those international obligations. So it's not a choice. We must just move forward. And I think this bill must be seen in that context, that it's one of the instruments that help us to transition, that help us to move forward. There are other efforts around what South Africa has to do to comply with the international commitment. For instance, there is a climate change bill that has been approved by Cabinet, is coming to us. We will be processing that bill. So this is not the only instrument that is there to deal with climate change. There are many other instruments that are coming. We will be processing that probably when we come back to that. Our commitment is to finalize it before this parliament, so that is one of the host of instruments that is available to us as a country to deal with the climate change. So there are some questions. I'm not sure whether the department, National Treasury or DIA would want to respond to them. In the past, 2 months ago, we requested a workshop. And I was supposed to finalize it with the chair, the Comrade Union. So it has not happened. I think at some point we must make that workshop to happen so that all of us can understand exactly what is this problem. Because judging by the comments, you can see that there is still some lack of in-depth knowledge about this thing. It's very technical. But it helps us to move forward. Now, I don't know whether there are some comments from National Treasury, from the department. I saw a hand earlier on. I don't know whether you still want to comment. Now, let's start with the department and then DIA, and then we'll come.
Thanks, Chair. My earlier hand was around the
okay, just
I think about going from here to a great starting. But I think, Chair, I just wanted to say, I think your suggestion that there be a workshop, because I think a lot of the issues that are raised, they are right, not have been raised. You can provide, for example, I know that Mr. Brenya is new here. You can provide the background papers, so on. And I think the workshop would certainly help. But I was going to ask our colleagues from here, they will talk a bit about feathers and the commitments that you outlined, if there's a bit of time. Because I think that sets the framework, because as Santosh Bhaiya said, we are being led by that policy. So they can start to look after
afterwards. Okay, let's go. There's Alf.
Thank you, Chair. My fellow will end and Alf will deal with the president. But mine earlier was around the issue of alignment, which Shannon has responded just to indicate that the principle remains that we have to make sure that there are those alignments. But I think she went into an extent in terms of explaining the alignment. I just wanted to reinforce that, Chair.
Okay. Alf and myself.
Yeah, Chair. On the NDC, and I think in Honourable Wenger's comments about provisions to change your policy depending on its outcome, I'd just like to make 2 points. Number one, that the NDC, the ND in the NDC says, means nationally determined. So the Paris Agreement provides for five-year action cycles. But the policy mix and the mix of tools that any country uses to meet its obligation is completely within national power. So we have the ability change, introduce new tools to reduce or increase, so that flexibility is left completely within the power of the country to determine. The second point about the Paris Agreement, there is an obligation of conduct where there's an expectation that with successive five-year cycles of action, the level of ambition is increased over time. So that's written into the Paris Agreement as not an obligation of results, but an obligation of conduct. So those are the two points I wanted to make.
Important matter.
I think the issue that which I forgot to respond to is from Matthew Clark from Sasaki, that and again that will depend on the level of the text and how far it is instituted and to what extent new jobs are created. We've got a staff team with them at NASDAQ, which hopefully that process will also be in. It's not to look at the bill again, but just to look at the impact that's related to the rate and so on. So with regards to, I think, look, any modeling depends obviously on the assumptions you make and the impact, I think, on other sectors. I mean, the world is changing very fast. As other countries are coming up with positions, I mean, Europe already, what was it, 2-3 years ago, was already going to tax all airplane passengers coming into Europe. Again, what it demonstrated is when you deal with climate change, whilst we determine the targets nationally, nobody's imposing it on us. Our targets, as Alfred just pointed out. But it's our contribution to the world. You need a global agreement to resolve climate change. You cannot have just rely on country by country. So countries look at what's happening to the world. If they look at the science, they come to an understanding. And hard as it is, sometimes not on our side, make these decisions. That's why I say lagging behind, in a sense, in having this work. But certainly, if you look at the different sectors, so it could be the air travel sector, the world is going to be quite different as other countries impose new tariffs and so on. And unfortunately, it would be nice to say we could reverse things. But I think that the longer we delay in taking action in the world, the harder is it going to be to reach targets later. And the more extreme will be the measures that we'll have to take. I don't know if Charlie wants to come in or that's what, just on the other issues that they have today, I don't know if I've covered all the issues.
Thank you. I think just 2 points from my side. Why are we doing this? And the issue around we need to give respect to the polluter-based principle. And that's the reason for us taking this approach. How do we price these emissions and price the impact that are imposed on others? And how do you internalize that into the pricing of carbon-intensive products? And by doing that, you create various incentives. It's not primarily aimed at business, but it's targeted at the economy broadly, whether it's producers or consumers. It's how we set that price signal to give those incentives for people to start thinking in a different way. And I think it's important that through this mechanism, explicitly we are giving effect to the polluter-based principle. The second issue around the IRP, usually these instruments are implemented complementarily, both a regulatory measures as well as market-based instruments. One is targeting technologies. The IRP is setting a plan over a period of time on how our generation mix would change. Yes, it imposes a carbon constraint. And it specifies over that period of time when we phase out very carbon-intensive coal-fired power stations, for example. The carbon tax is complementary to that in that it creates those incentives beyond just targeting one particular sector. It's broadly based. So I think that conversation around the complementary package of measures is important, and that the role of a carbon tax as a very broad-based economy-wide instrument. And then quickly, lastly, from my side, and Cecil will add, the modeling was done, the socio-economic impact assessment gives details of the modeling, and it outlines the various assumptions. Obviously, a model does sometimes what you tell it to do. Not that we told the model to say we're going to achieve so much of emission reduction, but I think it's important to look at the modeling from the perspective of how it aids us in our decision making around a carbon pricing instrument. We did model a tax of 120 rand, and we looked at various revenue recycling measures. And the model showed us very at a high level which would be the sectoral winners and which would be the sectoral losers, and how and the change that would be required. It is not that dynamic. Yes, the whole sectoral issue is important, but gives us a high-level signal of what is possible, what the economic impact would be, and how we can address those over the medium to longer term. As part of the as part of the review that we intend to do, I agree that we do have an economic model available to us that we can use, and we need to supplement that with proper sectoral analysis. And looking at things like jobs, but also looking at the opportunities that would be created, looking at the technical options, and also building into the modeling what incentives would be created for things like technology development innovation, because we've heard from DR, we are moving towards a carbon-constrained world. The role for technology innovation would be critical. So, yes, we hear you, and I think it's useful input that we can take forward in the context of a workshop.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I think one must understand that the model has a limited impact and limited advice on we've done more than one model, and I think it's important that we share the full paper. It was done by independent experts, done by peer reviewed by an international organization. That report is well written. It's a very short document, 20 pages, trying to get it in the language terms, and I think it's important that at a workshop we share it and conclude that, and maybe we should share it with but again, and the instructions are very clear. So very clear and go into the sector of detail. Now, but I think the point that the member made about understanding the modeling and the contribution that model can do to a limited extent it does, he is there. On the IRP, I think we had a lot of discussions with both the Department of Energy and ESCOM on the role of the IRP. At one stage, the previous IRP actually tried to model the tax within the IRP. So that has been done. We must understand also that the IRP deals with a sector, which is an important sector, but doesn't deal with all emissions. Only deals with emissions from the industry sector, which is roughly 40-45% of emissions. But it doesn't deal with all emissions. So even if the IRP the solution to the carbon tax in the electricity sector, there's still a lot of other sectors. Although, I think from a trading perspective, we don't think that it does. On the long-term impact on electricity prices, I think it's important to understand the context of the concession that was made on electricity price neutrality during the first phase. It was there in the first draft. After consultation between three or four ministers, this proposal was put on the table. And that was specifically for the first phase, given the slump in the economy at that point, and also the challenges that the two sectors, electricity, cement and mining steel had, and to some extent mining also. You can't have that relief mechanism forever. At some point, you need to make sure it focuses to the impact of the tax focus to the economy. And the fact that the tax is so low shows you that that impact will be gradual. So you can't have a relief mechanism that you can do it for them. You need to at some point find it.
By saying, you know, one of the interesting things is the world is really changing fast. And as you know, we're getting electric cars, possibly driverless cars. We're going to find that maybe there's going to be less fuel, you know, the fuel stations will may go at some point,
will all be wanting even more electricity. So certainly when you look at electricity, not only are you looking at the long term, but you're looking at with innovation, what that will mean. And just to give an example, you know, I go to the meetings of the Financial Stability Board. One of the big issues you see is how the coal sector is what's regarded as a stranded asset. It's actually very difficult to get funding for the coal plants. You find that many institutions, even banks, the issue is, should they also be tested by the regulators that if they're funding coal plants, that that is not sustainable, it may not give them an income in the future. So those scenarios are being kind of ruled out. So they're calling them stranded assets. When we were at the World Bank earlier this year, there was a whole discussion on climate change, and they were pointing out, and it's called exports go, what happens to your rail line from Richard to Richard Gray. Now that train is one way, it's one of the really amazing long trains that you see. It takes forever. But just to show you how in very quick time those threats or those challenges face our economy, and we need to adjust because the world is already taking these issues. So we're not going to have all the answers. We're not even going to have half the answers. And I think that's why when people are asking us for 100% certainty about how this works, how that works, that should not be a reason to delay the vote. Time's not on our side. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We've been talking about reducing
carbon emissions, but it's not happening. Until and unless you come up with an instrument that will enable you to do that, you are not going to realize it. And of course, quite interesting the point that Momo is making. Manasela always argues that the future of coal is doomed. There will be a point where it will not be necessary for us to depend on coal to produce electricity, because the cost will be so much higher than other sources of energy. So those arguments are there, and they're very strong, and it's becoming apparent that it's going to happen. Unfortunately, our economy is intense, is dependent on coal, but we need a transition. We need to cap the emissions of greenhouse gases. Now, quite interesting was the issue that the ESCOM was raising, because it was also raised when we were discussing the minimum emission standards around air quality. The threat on the increase of electricity prices is something that is kept on being flat when we are requesting that industry must comply with South African legislation and with all agriculture. Because these emissions are dangerous. People are dying from this emission around air quality pollution. We have developed, government has developed minimum emission standards which will require industry to transition to cap some emissions. Now people keep on submitting applications for extension or for exemption from complying. They are calling them rolling postponements to comply with the minimum emission standard. Only on the air quality, and we have been told that investments can be made in technology because the costs are going to go high. So it's a continuous strife that we always get. Basically to say that we must not do anything. We must allow the emissions to continue as they are around air quality. We must allow the greenhouse gas emissions levels to be kept at the level where they are. And it's an argument which is unsustainable. It's not good for the country. For instance, the decommissioning plans of some of the power stations, which was part of the commitments that we made to say this is how we're going to reduce based on the submissions that we have. Now we are told that there's been postponement. Some of the plants which are polluting greatly because they are still dependent on the old technology, they are not going to be decommissioned for some reason or the other. So it's a continuous battle that requires firmness on the part of the government to make sure that they will achieve this reduction. So those are just my comments. I'm not sure whether one member would be offended by those comments, but those are the comments that based on our experience. Now, Comrade Eunice, we have agreed on the workshop. In fact, the idea of the workshop does not arise today. It was flagged 2 months ago. I did request it. Very firmly, we agreed just that we have not been able to identify a date. Now, the agency is still there to have that workshop. So, that's what we agreed. As for the other processes on when are you going to vote on the bill, it's something that the should discuss with your members. But the workshop, we might have to have a workshop when we come back as soon as possible. So this is the summary of the meeting, and I will hand over to you to close.
Apology, Mr.
Firstly, to apologize to people, the members understand this, but those who are here from the society, I've been at my phone and computer. But as I said to others, if you have this 94, you get to the mountain top. And I'm reasonably conversant with the issues, but obviously, together with the research and the chairs, we absolutely read every line between us and every comment and supplemental information. And we'll have a matrix done. We'll not the usual matrix, but each code and so on. So that's the first thing to say. The second thing to say is that the workshop came from presumably understood that the workshop understood very mind that passage makes the workshop is then between vision and supermatrix. So we will, the two chairs confer. Simply to explain that we have got at the moment the one builder talk today. We've got two others, but I think you bring about three or four builds. Huh? So we've got at least about eight builds, I think, involved, maybe more. We can't process all of them. But the carbon tax bill is something we want to do. And it will depend. Our main priority from our side is to raise the monetary goal when we come back and the CIC goal. Sorry? So that's later. When we come back maybe in August, it's the rate and monetary goal is the first thing and the CIC goal. Right. So I hope that we'll finalize that, provided you deliver. So we can't proceed. We could have gone on the rate and monetary goal next year, but we can't because you've got this process now to provide that. So the other thing is that we should get some process issues outside of the meeting. Is there sort of the intention to meet with the stakeholders again more, or have you completed the process? And the second issue is, where are we with job losses and Osatu and the trade union and their concerns?
So, Chair, yeah, just let me say that, the consultations have been taking a long time, and I really don't think we're going to ever reach agreement. We continue to engage. We continue to meet. So we will continue to meet. We'll deal with specific concerns. But I think on the big issues, we have made a judgment call. And that's been after extensive consultation. So I don't anticipate that there's going to be major changes beyond what we've outlined today. With regard to unions, I did say that within NAFTAC there's a craft team that's been set up. That, again, shouldn't hold up the boat because it's just to look at the impact. And I think the unions also acknowledge that, you know, some of these changes have nothing to do just with the carbon tax itself. Really where the world is going, the discounts that you have. So let's see what progress we make. Just to collect the other point, the T-Lab and the TALAP bills do normally get published in July. So we normally have the hearings in August. Now I'm just saying, just as initial hearing, so that...
Our priority is exactly that. The VAT bill and the CIC. For the rest, we will do everything. We are human.
Okay.
And you can't deliver either. Right? So there's a fact. Let's not discuss that anymore. It's like a fact record. I've written the interview to the minister. Now that the situation is plugging. What you can do then is ask for the election to be postponed by a year. So I would suggest you and your minister both are negotiation. You can also go and speak to the chief cook and tell him that we would meet from Sunday to Sunday. Don't do that. Yeah. And we must not take part in the election campaign. We must focus on your vote. So go ahead. Good luck. Right. And go to the Tuli House also and ask the history. Keep us here 25 hours a day, 8 days a week. You know, sometimes it says you say no. You're not allowed to raise this ever again. We're pushing this. We're not going to do it because we can't. Okay? If you hadn't increased the AT by 1%, we would have finished that. So that's that over. No, he keeps raising this thing. He's like this thing. Other thing is also raising, you know, countries many times. I said, no, it's over. Right, and I speak on behalf of that committee. And Sandy has no right to look at the minutes. Right? I discuss things with her all the time in the office there. Nothing you see me in the office there in the house, right? All the time I'm there, conferring with her. So that's done. But can I bring one thing to you? We would like a report on the NetBank process, I'm sure. So whoever it is will have to come here, or maybe even for the workshop, we want to. Secondly, we do not want this nominal thing that seems to have happened on the HPL. According to Kosatu and one other observer outside Kosatu, what happened on the health promotion levy is when we entered the bill, health and our company was taking the NetBank. They went to the NetBank, everybody was saying EDT, agriculture, everybody, right? DTI, everybody, because you wanted the bill. As soon as the bill was being studied, everybody withdrew. And then they sent their new, but they're a different company, new means young people who just come there, right? And then they put them there to talk to, you know, making Charlie Charlie, making Charlie, they were told by this, right? So they feel this is just a motion. So we're not going to allow that vote. So we are suggesting you and your brother there sort this thing out. We won't speak of the vote until we are clearer about what the implications of the job loss is. Are we clear on that? Is anybody objective? This bill won't be voted on until we get a report from NetBank and a clarity on what the implications are for job losses. Does any member of either of the committee disagree on that? Can, can you remember the question our friend there was?
Well, I don't know, Opeja. I'm not sure whether you discussed it in your committee before, that this bill has got implications for jobs. To that land. Our understanding was that the original intention was that we were going to process it, finalize it, and then it was being implemented by January. Now, the consultation process has taken some time, but I thought that we would finalize it without going to that land. I don't know whether you
what we do is wait until the vote. That has implications for jobs. We don't sit here and discuss it. We ask if the NetBank process and other processes. But we're not saying that until NetBank finishes its process, we won't vote on the process. That's all we're saying. And the aim is that we, unfortunately, you are also involved with the problem if you have time, but we won't be able to deal with the problem. We've got two votes, then we've got two more tax votes that we have to talk about. It's extremely impossible for us to give any guarantees that we will finish the vote this year. We make no commitments, at least when I'm in the yeah, we said by the end of the before the go to the next financial year is the aim to finish the vote, certainly before the election. But if the environment project needs to be done by January, we can consider that. And maybe you can process the policy straight to the way up and then bring it to us. That's another option that we can look into. But this committee is impossible because if we don't have the tax code, we can't have a budget. And we have a lot of people and the money goes back. No other committee has that where the laws are fine. That's fine. So we can discuss that. But you must be very careful also. We understand the way the committee operates. And they very assertive. And I hope that your committee will stand around. Because it's very effective, and they just want to get what they want. We can have to constrain them. So, as long as finally it comes to us, and it's the bill that we have to vote on and be accountable for, so as long as I understood, we can do what you want, but the decision has to be finalized between us two, and the committee has to vote on the call. So, we have to hold it in implementation. Having said that, the issue about jobs is that anybody who has a difficulty with us saying, that between now and the time we come back, let's say towards the end of August, I can't see it even before. Maybe we'll just slide in the workshop. We can't process it until September. What you're asking is between now and say the end of August, can you, Momo, and your team negotiate with Kosatu and so on, and whatever problem you've got in NetBank, you have a written report for us on the indicators of job loss. That's what we say. Okay, we're done between now and the deadline we say 14th of August. The journal.
No, Chair, definitely try. And we'll also be happy to have the workshop anytime.
The workshop will probably be
okay, we can come to the end of the meeting. So the meeting is adjourned.
But because the relationship is much more close, they are You can be with me.